three speakers. We have a last-minute addition here that I think is going to be a really good talk. This panel, we're going to be talking about grand jury, recent history, and present. That's going to deal with Pacific Northwest and Bay Area grand jury events. So our first speaker is going to be Dennison, Pacific Northwest, who was recently subpoenaed by the grand jury. We have Christian Williams, who's the author of Our Enemies in Blue. He's got a new book out called Hurt, and also a volunteer at Real City Cop Watch. And then finally, we have Richard Brown, formerly of the Black Panther Party, community activist, and one of the San Francisco Eight. This is another grand jury hearing that I'm sure many of us are familiar with here in San Francisco, or in the San Francisco Bay Area, excuse me. So Dennison's going to start us off. And we're going to do some Q&A directly after this panel. There won't be any breakout groups, so just so folks know. So,
go ahead. Hi, I'm Dennison. I was subpoenaed to appear before the grand jury that's happening in the Pacific Northwest. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what my experience was with that, as well as what my experience was with responding to that and some ideas I have on responding to grand juries. I'm going to do that in less than 10 minutes. So I woke up... I woke up one day and my door was being knocked down by a bunch of FBI agents, and they threw a flashbang in my house. They accidentally lit the carpet on fire, and they had to put that out and come back in. They came in with guns drawn, and they had me... Some of these details I don't know if are important to share, but whatever, I'm going to share them anyways, because I feel like it draws a picture of like the experience that I had. And I was handcuffed without pants for a little bit. And while they went through the house, and they had a search warrant for black clothes, anarchist flags, anarchist literature, anarchist flags, black flags, and maybe other stuff. That's all I remember. And after a short while, maybe an hour and a half or so, sometime in between there, I got my pants, and then they handed me a subpoena to appear before a grand jury. It turned out later that day that two other houses in Portland were raided at the same time, and that two other subpoenas were served in Olympia. Is that right? The same day. And shortly after that, folk from Portland got together with a local radical lawyer, and we all had a meeting to start talking about how we wanted to respond. And one of the things, the other person who was subpoenaed at the same time, Leah, in Portland to appear before the grand jury, we both decided that we didn't want to cooperate. We decided that we didn't want to cooperate in different ways. But then immediately when one of the other things that we talked about that we wanted to do is that we wanted to make it clear to a larger radical community that we were not going to cooperate. And we did that with other people who had media experience working with the media, who started up a media campaign to address that. We drafted a statement about how we weren't going to communicate or cooperate with the grand jury, and we started trying to organize with the other people who had been subpoenaed. Some lawyers, legal advice had been given to other people who were subpoenaed that they were going to try to take different tactics in dealing with this subpoena, such as filing a motion to quash, in that stating that appearing before the grand jury would cause unnecessary hardships in their life, and therefore it shouldn't be valid, and that upon advice of the lawyer that they shouldn't be open about what their intentions were, because that would possibly damage the procedural motions they were going to apply. So a few other people decided to take the approach of not being open about how they weren't going to cooperate. At the first hearing, I didn't show up, and I found out that my subpoena had been dropped. I didn't know why, but what we did know at the time is that grand juries often don't investigate people who are targets of the investigation. And at a later hearing where Leah was in front of the grand jury, we found out that they had been asking questions about me. So that confirmed some of the suspicions that we had. Organizing around resisting the grand jury has looked like a lot of like talking with people and trying to find support for the other grand jury resistors. Some things that I think were important were for people who were subpoenaed to make sure they got lists of things that they needed if they were taken into custody. And getting that to people, making sure that there was liaisons with the lawyers who are going to be representing the people who were subpoenaed. And now in hindsight, something that I think is a good idea is being clear very explicitly about what the strategy is going to be and having conversations with people like, okay, you're going to go in front of the grand jury. Precisely how do you intend to not cooperate? And what we found was really nice is recently, if you may have seen on the CAPER website, Maddie had the full transcript of their proceeding. And that was taken by Maddie in the courtroom. You may be allowed to take notes. They gave flack to some of the other subpoenas about taking notes and scared some of them about taking notes. And then you can get those out to your lawyer. You're able to go out and meet with your lawyer after each question. And so that's how that information go out. And I think that was really important. And I've been of the opinion from the early on that getting that information out, if you're going to take notes, and I think taking notes is a really good idea, and getting that out as soon as possible creates this transparency that not only shows other people that you're not cooperating, and again, this is your word because the grand jury is closed, but I still think it's important because it should indictments come later, like information about people cooperating will come up. But this transparency helps in showing the community that, like, hey, we're still resisting, and this is the strategy and what we're doing it with. And also, any questions that they ask about specific individuals can get out to those individuals who may have concerns about their how they're being looked into. Some of the other things about support, right, talking about how exactly you plan on resisting. One idea I've had recently is being realistic with each other about what our limitations are. Like, you may know that you have a specific diet that you need in prison, and preparing for that and preparing what you're going to do if you can't have that diet met. But like understanding that, or maybe people who are getting subpoenaed, or maybe people in your community do have psych issues, or do have children, or who may have like other dependencies, like dependencies that make it very difficult for them, that they would be easily pressured into talking. Like knowing how your community is going to support the people in your community, I think, is really important, and having those conversations up front and about knowing what people's limitations are and how we're going to support people in those limitations. I think that's something really important. That didn't happen to the extent that I would have liked it to with the CAPER stuff. I don't know. I think that's all I'm going to talk. I'm going to pass this on from that. That was about 10 minutes. So we can talk more, and if people have specific questions, maybe we can get that into that in the discussion section.
I'm Christian Williams. I have been working with the Committee Against Political Repression, which has been doing a lot of the support work for the grand jury resistors. I'm only going to talk shortly so that we have plenty of time for question and answer at the end, because I want to respond to like the questions that actually exist rather than just trying to guess as to what's going to be important for people to hear. The I'm just going to fill in a little bit around the story that, that Dennison just told. So, thus far, there have been five people subpoenaed before the grand jury. Two of them, Matt Duran and Katie Olesnik, are in prison right now. One of them, Leah Plant, was in prison and has been released, and we don't really know what the story is there. Dennison, as he mentioned, he refused to appear, and his subpoena was dropped. We found out later that they're asking the other subpoenas about him, so we're assuming that he's a target of the investigation at this point. The fifth person is Maddie Pfeiffer, who was subpoenaed just a couple weeks ago and appeared on Wednesday of this week, last week, and was released partly because of the incompetence of the U.S. attorney. Like, they, Maddie's lawyer wasn't available on the day that they were subpoenaed, and let the U.S. attorney know that, and the U.S. attorney refused to move the date. And then the, which doesn't really make much difference for a grand jury hearing because you can't have a lawyer in there anyway, but did make a difference when it got to the contempt of court hearing. And so since Maddie didn't have representation, the judge granted a continuance, and so they will have their contempt hearing on December, I think, 15th. Is that right? Yeah. The expectation is that Maddie will probably go to prison then. In terms of some of the support work, some of that is some of the stuff that Dennison mentioned in terms of making sure that the material needs of the subpoenas are met, like you know, making sure that there are going to be people to visit them in prison, making sure that there are going to be people who write them letters, making sure that they have money in their commissary fund so that they can, you know, get stamps or food or whatever it is they need in prison. Helping them get the legal advice that they need, you know, making sure that there is somebody to, like, take care of their cat or whatever when they're incarcerated. And obviously that requires a certain amount of fundraising, so that's been a preoccupation of ours, but honestly it's been easier than I think any of us anticipated. The other main effort that we've had is doing media work around this and trying to make sure that people know about the case, make sure that people have the best information that's available in terms of who is resisting and how they're resisting and what the current status of the cases are, and also really trying to humanize the people who have been subpoenaed, and assuming that there are indictments coming later, to humanize the people who will be indicted, and to try to take hold of the narrative and tell the story about this that we want to tell, rather than just having the newspapers unanalytically report the story that the U.S. attorney or the FBI wants to tell about this. So, I don't know, did I leave anything out there? Yeah, so that's basically what we've been doing. Also some stuff like this, like some public education things about what grand juries are and how they work and the importance of resisting them and how they can be resisted. And so if I'm going to stop there so that we have time for question and answer, and if you have questions, like, please don't hesitate when the time comes. Please.
Okay, thank you. My name is Richard Brown, and I am a resister. I have been for over 50 years. It helps to be rebellious by nature, which I am. I've always rebelled against authority, so when it came to not cooperating with the police and the FBI and the CIA, Homeland Security, and anybody else associated with the government, it was easy for me to do that. But just because I'm rebellious by nature, number one, and because number two, I realized that I've learned that cooperating with the police or cooperating with grand juries always lead to problems for people. For you, they will never be honest with you. They'll never give you a fair shake. It's not in their nature to do that. Grand juries are used as tools in order to entrap people, in order to cast out a bigger net, bring in more people, place pressure on you, your friends, your community, in order to discourage people from any type of progressive thinking or progressive activities. It is not, if the police or the grand jury, if they seriously wanted to investigate crimes and try to do something to serve and protect or whatever that crap is that they claim, then they would, you know, maybe you might cooperate with them. Maybe you might want to do something. But that's not their job. Their job is to undermine any kind of progressive activity going on in the community. They want to beat people down. They want to put people in a position to where you feel like you don't have an opportunity or a chance to win at anything, which is a lie, because they're the ones technically who don't have a chance. I say most of the time when I start out speaking to people, I always say all power to the people. And that's because I believe, I know for a fact throughout history, throughout my history, that a united people will always win. If you have the support of the people from your community and the locally and in the nationally and internationally, there's nothing that they can really do to you. I have been harassed by the FBI, by grand juries for so long, it's impossible for me to even remember when it all started. And they're not through with me, I know that. And I have to be prepared for that. In 2005, I was indicted, the grand jury indictment, federal grand jury. They wanted me to cooperate with them, myself and I think four or five other Panthers, ex-Panthers, or Panthers. And we went about not cooperating with them. Actually, we didn't even have to communicate with each other. They brought us in from all different parts of the country, and we just decided, based upon our history, without even talking to anybody, that we were not going to cooperate. Naturally, I got an attorney. That's one of the things that you really need is a good attorney. You need very good legal representation. The other thing that you need is very good community support, political support, your political community. You need them to support you. You have to also remember that you are not, it's important that you remember that you're not there as an individual. You are not resisting as an individual, and actually you can do that. There may be some people who are able to do that and do a very good job of it. I tend to be stronger when I know that I have something to fight for. When I'm fighting for my community or fighting for the people or fighting for my family, it's a whole lot more to me than, say, resisting just because I'm rebellious. That's not going to get it. But resisting for a cause, resisting for my community, resisting for the people and being supported by the people, it's what's always allowed me to be strong and to come out as a strong person, just as I've always been, to always try to be when in dealing with the police or dealing with problems in my community. I do not believe that they're through with me. So in the future, it is important that I psych myself up and put myself in a position so I know that one of these mornings they're going to kick my door in at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, run in with all these guns, scared to death. The main thing that I'm afraid of is that they shake so much and they're so frightened that I'm scared that they'll pull the trigger just, you know, honestly, they don't, you know, it's amazing how you can have 10 to 12 to 15 armed guys, each of them have two or three guns, a bulletproof vest, shields, all pepper spray, tasers, shotguns, and they are afraid. And I'm at home sleep, you know, minding my own business like I am most of the time. Most of the time. I don't want to go too far with that. But and they are more afraid, honestly, than I am. You know, it's not to say that I'm not afraid, because I am, but I try at least to hide it, and they can't. So, now, in the future, They will probably come back. I was fortunate the last time in 2005 because we drug it out so long, and every time they would ask me a question, I would go outside and confer with my attorney. I would come back in, and I would take my time about, you know, they played games with me. The whole thing, as far as I'm concerned, was their way of screwing with me, so I screwed with them. I would even, some of the questions I made it appear as though I was really even thinking about answering the question, which I had no idea, none whatsoever. You know, they would say, well, did you know, ask the question? I would say, well, would you repeat that, please? And then I'd say, well, I'm going to go outside. And I'd go out and I'd come back and I'd say, no, on the fifth, I plead the fifth or whatever. We stalled so long that actually when they locked me up, offered me the partial immunity and full immunity, and I still said no. But I only had about 6 weeks to go before the life of the grand jury was up. They made sure that that was as horrible as possible. It's not a criminal offense, so you're not supposed to be treated as a criminal. It's civil, so you're supposed to be locked up differently, treated differently, allowed to have certain things that people who are convicted of a crime don't have. Of course, I didn't have that. They kept me isolated all the time, in the hole, moving around so my attorney couldn't catch up with me, and just made life as miserable as possible. But 6 weeks, you can take anything in 6 weeks. So, but what I have to worry about and what I'm concerned about is if they come again and if I have to do the whole 18 months or close to that. And then knowing that they do not, I mean, they can refile and take you and put you back in after the 18 months is over. Again, I'm psyching myself up to the point to where I will hopefully be able to go through that. I'm pretty sure I will, especially if I have the support of the people. So I want to end by saying all power to the people, and thank you for the support that you gave me and the rest of the San Francisco 8. And if I need your help in the future, be there. Thank you.